This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. Next Saturday, January 25th, Florida Gulf Coast University is hosting a water quality conference called Celotega 2020, The Estero Bay's in Trouble, What Citizens Can Do to Help. It will bring together experts in science, policy, and civic engagement with the goal of helping residents get the knowledge, information, and skills they need to be a positive influence in addressing the many water quality issues we face in Southwest Florida, and not just Estero Bay. The day-long conference begins at 8 a.m., It's free and open to everyone. We're getting a bit of a preview of the conference today. My guests are Dr. Nora Demers. She's an associate professor of biology at FGCU and organizing the upcoming Celotega conference. Dr. Demers, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Hecker is executive director of the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership. Jennifer, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us.
And Charlie Whitehead is a retired local journalist who lives out near Fort Myers Beach. He will be emceeing the conference. Charlie, good to see you again.
You too, Mike. Thanks.
And to engage with us and your fellow listeners about this conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter. We're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Nora, where does the conference name come from? I understand it's a Calusa word or words?
Correct. It's a Calusa term meaning view from the high ground, and we use it to symbolize what all of the Celotegas have been, which is, you know, kind of our, the high ground for us is the Estero Bay watershed.
Whose idea was that?
For the conference?
Yeah, no, to use that,
for that name.
That's an interesting way to frame it.
Yeah, so it's the Estero Bay Agency on Bay Management. Jim Beaver, Jennifer Hecker, and a number of the other leaders in that. You know, when we started our first conference in, I think it was 2008, we said, okay, what do we call this? And we created our own name and word.
So this is something you've done before with this same name?
Correct. This is, I believe, the fifth.
I don't think I'd heard that before. So apparently I wasn't paying attention. Who's the target audience?
Target audience for this is everyone. So we are hoping to bring in elected officials, mayors, managers, senior staff, staff that work in the agencies and for the different entities, the advisory boards, all of the people that are friends of in all of our local parks and stuff. So, I mean, it's everybody that lives in the Estero Bay watershed and or has an interest in the issues about the importance of water in maintaining the triple bottom line.
Do you have any idea if there will be any politicians, any, you know, lawmakers there?
We have informally invited them, and then tomorrow is our next planning committee, and hopefully by the end of the day we will have sent formal invitations, hopefully to all of those publics that I just mentioned.
Gotcha. So it's about Estero Bay, or at least that's what we would call like the news peg, but it's also just about the interconnected water issues that we all face all across Southwest Florida or all across, well, the world, right?
Correct.
So, Jennifer, how is Estero Bay doing right now?
Well, there's always room for improvement. And I think that some of the issues that Estero Bay faces, as you mentioned, are not unique to that watershed and are actually intertwined with things that are going on outside of it, of that watershed. So we're going to be covering all those issues, and I think it is very appropriate for people from neighboring areas to come to this conference because we'll be covering very high-level, big-picture issues like nutrient pollution, which is a widespread water quality problem that we see throughout our entire state.
We've had a very wet winter. Do you have any sense of how it's affected things? I mean, I know you are tracking all of this. I tried to get somebody from the district on to talk about it, but I wasn't able to make that work. What is your sense of how this wet winter has affected the systems?
Well, I don't want to do a spoiler. I think we're going to go through a lot of that. In fact, there is a new State of the Bay report coming out that is going to give us a synopsis of all the different ecological conditions. So we hope to cover a lot of that at the conference. But again, I think we're seeing the same types of issues that we see throughout the region. And we are looking at what types of solutions and actions can citizens take to personally engage in helping to protect these important resources like water and wildlife.
And saw that the Calusa waterkeeper, John Cassani, was reporting cyanobacteria in the Calusa Hatchie, which is atypical for this time of year. Have you heard anybody talking about whether there might be a connection between the wet winter we've had and that? Because it seems like maybe that would cause the kinds of runoff you might not expect during the winter. Have you heard anybody speculating that? I'm not a scientist, but that was the first thing that I thought.
Well, I just came from the Everglades Coalition conference that was held out on Captiva Island and this past weekend, and it was discussed. I think it's complicated, and we're doing a lot of research and analysis to try to figure out what all the drivers are. We know that there are some things outside of our control, like temperature, that can affect the growth of these harmful algaes. But we also know that there are things in our control, like nutrient pollution, that we can be doing more that would hopefully lessen the frequency, severity of these blooms.
Is this conference trying to educate everyday people on the things they can do, or is it more educating policymakers and people in agencies about what they should be thinking?
I'll take that. It's all of the above.
Okay.
You know, the problems took all of us, and the solutions are going to take all of us.
Gotcha. Charlie, how did you get involved?
Well, I attended I attended what I believe was the first ever State of the Bay conference in 1994. It was hosted at Fort Myers Beach. I've lived on Fort Myers Beach. Estero Bay is literally my backyard. I've lived there since the mid 80s. My grandparents bought there in the 70s. I've spoken to people that fished Estero Bay every day in the 50s when they retired, and I've been watching it go on for a long time, and in my previous life, I wrote quite a bit about it.
Can you reflect on the changes you've seen? I know there's a long time and there's a lot of changes, but if you had to distill it down, how would you say it?
Well, even in my relatively short time living on the Bay, I remember in the middle of the night hearing the dolphins blow in the canal. I remember watching the manatees busily engaged in making little manatees in my canal. We don't get that anymore. Mine's kind of a little backwater canal, but you do see the difference.
Can you recall a winter as wet as this?
I'm sure there have been. I don't specifically remember one.
Right. I live in a really old house, and the doors swell up in the summer. And for the first time ever, my doors have swollen up in the winter. So I know that is, evidence of something. Jennifer, as we head into the legislative session, are you tracking any legislation when it comes to these water quality issues?
Yes, very much so. I mean, first, the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership, the group I represent, is one of the congressionally designated national estuary programs in the United States, one of 28. And so, of course, we track a lot of federal legislation that relates to federal funding of water projects in our area, including the Everglades restoration. But recently, we also have been working really hard with our local state legislators to get more state legislation introduced to protect waters. Representative Heather Fitzenhagen from our area filed House Bill 971, and Senator Mayfield from the East Coast filed the Senate Companion Bill, Senate Bill 1608. That would provide more consistent funding for the National Estuary Programs. Our National Estuary Program in Southwest Florida, the one that I'm a part of, covers all the way from Venice to Benia Springs, and it brings millions of extra dollars down to do water quality sampling, restoration, seagrass and oyster plantings. So we want to make sure that we continue to make these investments in protecting and restoring these resources that we rely upon and that we enjoy.
Are people in the environmental community here in Southwest Florida optimistic going into this legislative session? Seems like, Governor DeSantis has made some pretty bold moves and put some things into action that he just didn't just say, but he did. Is that what you guys are feeling?
Absolutely. I think we're really excited about the trajectory at the state level. There are some challenges at the federal level, and we are working really hard to overcome those. But I think overall, we have a lot of ground to make up. There was a lot of lack of investment over the past few years that has resulted in us falling behind and making the progress with restoration that we had hoped for. So now we almost have to double up, triple up on our investments, and we were talking about that at the Everglades meeting about that in a few years. We're going to need to triple the amount of funding even to keep up with that and try to bring Everglades restoration to a closure and see those benefits to our estuaries as a result.
Nora, have you been following at all, like this past year, what's been going on at Tallahassee, Everglades Restoration, some of the increased monitoring they're talking about? Do you have a sense of you know, how that's going?
Yes. I haven't obviously been able to follow it as closely as Jen because
sure.
she gets to do that as her full-time job.
Right.
And I get to teach our students at FGCU as my full-time job. But yes, absolutely. I've been paying attention to not only local stuff but statewide.
Charlie, as a retired journalist, what are your thoughts on this year one of the DeSantis administration and what's going on in Tallahassee in terms of water here in Southwest Florida?
Well, I will tell you that I'm hopeful. After two administrations of playing defense, maybe we can get something good to happen.
If you just joined the show today, we're getting a preview of the upcoming water quality conference at Florida Gulf Coast University called CELATEGA 2020. The Estero Bay is in trouble. What citizens can do to help? Our guests are the conference organizer, Dr. Nora Demers, who's an associate professor of biology here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Jennifer Hecker, she's executive director of the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership. And Charlie Whitehead, he's a retired local journalist. He'll be emceeing the conference. To add your thoughts, find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter. We're at WGCU, use the hashtag GCL. Jennifer, you're going to be giving a talk called Tracking and Reducing the Nutrient Pollutions That Fuel Harmful Algal Blooms, or HABs, it says. I don't want to give away anything, but, you know, can you give us an overview of that?
Well, there's just so much that's being done that I think that the public isn't aware of. Certainly there, again, can always be more done. But we want to make sure that people are aware of the existing tools and resources that are out there where they can become more educated about what's going on in their waterways, how they can protect themselves and their health of their families. We also want to make sure that they come away with some immediate actions that they can take, things that they can support policy, legislative-wise, like we've been speaking of, in their own backyards, things that actions they can be taking around their homes. So this is a big part of our organization is public education and engagement, and we're really excited to be a sponsor of this year's 2020 CELATEGA.
South Florida Water Management District and the Florida DEP, they were going to be increasing the frequency and scope of the water quality testing. Is that in place? Is that happening? I haven't tracked it since that was all said it was going to be done, but I figure you probably do.
Yes, that is moving forward, and we're really excited. We really need more water quality sampling and monitoring. And many places right now, we don't have adequate data to adequately assess whether a water body is meeting state water quality standards. And that should not be the case. And we would like to see eventually that we have sufficient monitoring networks set up that every water body can be assessed so that we can know whether it's safe for its designated use, safe for swimming or fishing. And then if it's not, that it's properly notified, that the public knows. We're learning more every day, thanks to the FGCU and many other researchers, about the public health impacts of these HABs. And in fact, you know, we are directly involved, the CHNEP as well, in that effort. And we really need to be doing more to know what the condition of these waters is and then to communicate that to the public so that the public can take the appropriate actions needed to protect these waters and themselves.
Have you, there's public-facing websites where the water quality can be found, but I know that last time I checked, it wasn't very up to date. Do you know if they've gotten that spun up to where it is up to date now?
So actually, we pull all of the water quality data from many different agencies and organizations together and try to put it together on one publicly accessible website.
Through the CHNEP.
Yes, called the CHNEP Water Atlas. So we're always working to make that more user-friendly. It's a little techy right now, but it is a one-stop shop essentially for all publicly accessible data. And that's really important because then we can see where the gaps are, where we need to be putting additional resources. We can also synthesize that data to really understand what's going on because data is meaningless if it isn't used and applied to make decisions. And that's really where we're putting our emphasis now as well.
Okay. We'll have to put a link to that on the web post for this show. Dr. Demers, one of your fellow FGCU professors, Dr. Mike Parsons, was on or is on the, you know, the Blue-Green Algae Task Force. Have you followed the work that they've been doing? And do you have a sense of, you know, whether the recommendations they've come out with are covering the right bases, in your opinion?
I am following what he's doing. He will be speaking at the Water Resources Conference held at FGCU on January 24, Friday. So he's one of the speakers for that. The conference is called the Water School Emerging Priorities for Our Region. And so I've absolutely been following Mike's work. I am behind 100% what the Blue-Green Algae Task Force is recommending, and I've even offered him a couple other things that I'd like to see them put in. So it's always a work in progress, and a task force is where you start. These things will only be accomplished when everybody gets together and says, yes, we want this. One of the most important things is we are willing to pay more.
Any give us a sense of what you're hoping they'll add in?
I live in San Carlos Park, and I have septic.
Okay.
And what I've been doing since I joined the Estero Bay Agency on Bay Management is to try and I've been told that I'm bad because I have a septic tank and I'm bad because I fertilize. And I said, okay, how much of which of those things is how bad, mm-hmm. and what can I do about it? And so what I'm thinking of is more soft best management practices. For example, to get to Mike Parsons, can I get advanced septic tank treatment processes into place in my home and my community? Because the idea of trying to sewer a community that is 60 years old, that has all sorts of stuff underground, that nobody knows where it is or anything else, you know, and the reality that many times, you know, our infrastructure is crumbling because we have not paid it sufficient attention and provided, you know, the money for it. So I would rather see us deal with the hand we've got, address the problems, clearly failing wastewater treatment facilities and the pipes that get it from the wastewater to the reuse places that are, you know. And so my research is about chemical compounds in the water besides the nutrients, which is taking so much of the attention that Mike and the Blue-Green Algae Committee is working on is primarily a nutrient base, as best I understand it.
Yeah. Jennifer, what is your take on the task force's recommendations?
Oh, I think they're a great start, and we have legislation moving now that would implement many of those, so that's very exciting. We hope that gets passed this session. It really needs to happen. I think that then we can build upon that to address things like Dr. Demers just mentioned, and we are hopeful that they'll continue to expand the effort. For instance, one of the things that we're very supportive of that we have in our legislative priorities on our website is updating the statewide stormwater regulations. We know that new developments are not being built with adequate retention and treatment. We've known that now for nearly 10 years. And yet we have not updated the requirements for new developments in the permitting process. And I think it's time. We have extreme growth occurring, and we don't want to be going in at taxpayer expense of having to retrofit those developments in the future. We should be building better today.
One of the – I don't know if criticism is the right word, but one of the things I've heard about the task force recommendations is that they didn't express strongly enough concern over the possible health effects of chronic exposure to the toxins produced by cyanobacteria. Have you heard anybody say that? Because they do talk about it a little bit at the end, but there's no firm way forward. It's just we need to know more.
Well, one of the reasons that's the case, and there's a big push for this, which I think makes a lot of sense, is that we need cyanobacteria water quality standards. So EPA has some recommendations, but they're not specific to Florida. But we would like collectively, I think the general public would like to see the state develop state-specific cyanobacteria standards so that we know how much is too much. I mean, cyanobacteria is a natural compound mm-hmm. found in small quantities in many waterways. But when it reaches to a certain threshold, it becomes a public health concern. We need to know what is that threshold for Florida waters. And I think that's where you see it's people saying we need to really commit ourselves to do the research, find out what that threshold is, and then put it into policy so that we know how much is too much and we can warn people accordingly.
You know, if it's weird to say if there could be an upside to a harmful algal bloom like we had, at least the fact that I think most people now know what cyanobacteria is and that it's blue-green algae and that it can be – you know what I mean? These are things that most people had no clue about before we went through that big event that now everybody seems to have a handle at least a little bit on. Dr. Demers, your presentation is about public participation on advisory boards, opportunities, and experiences. What's like the short version of that? Is that trying to get people to go out there and get engaged?
Well, I think I'm going to tell my story about how I've tried to do that.
Sure.
So I'm currently a member of the Estero Bay Agency on Bay Management, the San Carlos Park Metropolitan Services Taxing Unit, and also the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And I've gotten on all of them because of my parochial view and my desire for a solution that requires me to understand and work within the governance structure that exists.
I went through and looked at the different sessions, and we don't have time to go over them all because we're almost out of time, believe it or not. But I saw one of them is former Attorney General Janet Reno's sister, Maggie Herchala. We had her on this show. She's got quite a story. You want to give just the real short version of that, what she's going through?
Well, Maggie apparently got hit with a slap suit, strategic lawsuits against public participation, and they found against her to the tune of about $4.5 million.
Right.
And so now that is in appeal, which apparently is typically the way lawsuits go. And so the biggest message that I heard from Maggie, and I think that we'll be presenting at the Celotega, is that we all need to work together. And in the case of Maggie, she now has 20 amicus. And in the case of many of the things that have happened in the Estero Bay watershed, the Responsible Growth Management Coalition, which I represent, has intervened on behalf of the county on numerous occasions, so been amicus to the county.
And the amicus briefs are people speaking out in her favor
or
on her behalf.
Correct.
And really what happened to her is she kind of got sued for advocating.
Yep. It's a slap suit.
Through the wrong channels. I don't even know if that's the way to put it. It's a very complicated story. But
yes.
It was – when I first saw it, I was like, oh, she just got sued for $4.5 million because she was an environmental advocate.
Right. So if you go to the Celotega website, if you just Google Celotega, C-E-L-A-T-E-G-A, and scroll down to session 4 on the link for Maggie, if you just click on it, you'll see the Slap Maggie webpage. And she has two webpages. One is all the legal documentation in the Slap lawsuit, and the second is all of the news media coverage of her situation. So we're very fortunate to have her on our conference.
If I could add one thing, too, is speaking with Maggie, I mean, she felt very fortunate that she was the one that this happened to. I mean, it is about public commenting and the right of the public to participate in public decision making. But she has the resources and the stamina to see this through, and she is very committed to doing so. She feels like she's not doing this just for herself, but for all people who want to remain engaged. And just it's the core of our democracy, really. Mm-hmm. So she's a hero in the environmental community. I really think anyone who has the chance to come out and hear her should. She has a very important message and story to tell and has been at this a long, long time and trying to protect our environment and our quality of life here in South Florida.
Real quick, how are things looking up in Charlotte Harbor?
They're looking all right right now. And you know, in the Coosahatchee, we could use additional flow. So we are seeing some stress to our seagrass restoration areas, which is unfortunate. We're hoping that we can see some additional flow soon. But at this rate, if this continues, we could see some die off. And that's, again, you know, a couple steps forward, a couple steps back. We need to be having consistent water management that supports our resources like our oysters and our seagrasses. We can't just keep going back and forth. These setbacks, by the time we start recovering and recover, then we have another setback. We're not going to make adequate progress that way.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. Jennifer Hecker is Executive Director of the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership. Jennifer, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Dr. Nora Demers is an Associate Professor of Biology at Florida Gulf Coast University and organizer of the upcoming Celotega Conference. Dr. Demers, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
And Charlie Whitehead is a retired local journalist who lives out near Fort Myers Beach. He'll be emceeing the conference. Charlie, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us out here, Mike. Always fun.
You can find links to more information about the conference and how to register, including for the keynote address by author Craig Pittman, who will be discussing his new book, Cattail, The Wild, Weird Battle to Save the Florida Panther, and a boat ride on the Coosahatchee field trip that's happening the day after the conference on our website, wgcu.org/GCL. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Life is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kinnairy. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.